Hello again, and welcome back to another episode of M&A Today. My name is Warren Rose, and I am a senior partner at Grosch, Rose & Moore, LLC. I'm your host for the next 30 minutes, not only today, but every Friday at noon Eastern. Thanks for tuning in, and feel free to send me your thoughts, ideas, or questions during the broadcast. And if I don't get to them live on the air, I will respond via email after the show. For everyone listening today, we encourage your involvement and feedback. You can always go back and listen to previous broadcasts that you may have missed or ones that you'd like to hear again. The purpose of this broadcast is to not only educate and inform those of you within the industry, but to give an insight into the advantages of using a professional M&A consulting firm for businesses within the middle market segmentation. The program today is entitled Tools of the Trade, and we will focus on vetting, blind profiles, confidential information memorandums, NDAs, letters of understanding, and more. So let's start off with vetting. If you've done this long enough, you've had your share of contacts from fakes, phonies, scammers, time wasters, and wannabes. If they are known to you or your firm, that's one thing. But if you don't know who these people are and it's a random contact, an initial simple search on names, addresses, and websites will sometimes provide you with enough information to eliminate them as a client or take them to the next step. If that's not enough and this is an ongoing issue, you could have the potential client fill out a profile form with whatever pertinent information you need answers to further vet them. This is a very valuable service to your existing clients because there would be nothing worse for them or your reputation than to introduce them in a business deal to an entity that cannot or will not consummate the deal. Next, let's look at what is a blind profile, otherwise known as an investment teaser. A blind profile is a one or two slide paged summary of a potential sales process without mentioning the name of the potential target company in order to maintain the company's identity as confidential. A teaser should include the unique selling points of the company while ensuring that the value of the business is understood by a large audience. That's because a wider search for buyers helps the target company get the best possible deal. When a company decides to go for a sales process, the first and foremost objective of the company is to get the maximum sale price and the best fit for their company. Sometimes this is an emotional decision where it's been owned by them or their family for a long period of time, and they want to make sure it goes to the right person, it's put in the right hands. In order to achieve this, they hire companies like us, and it becomes imperative for us to market the company well to potential buyers. Hence, that's why we prepare a professional document known as a blind profile, wherein we highlight the company's business, financials, projected growth, customers, etc., to attract these potential buyers. At this point in time, the company doesn't want to disclose its identity and prefers to remain confidential. Hence, the teaser is prepared without disclosing the company's name. We will talk about the document later that's included in. So now let's look at the blind profile's contents. Starting off, industry overview. The blind profile should include brief details about the industry and the competitive landscape where the company operates. Next, the business description. That should include the company's capabilities along with the nature and type of products or services it offers to its customers. And an important point is make sure that this information isn't copied directly from the company's website. If you do that, then the reader might be able to take a few of those keywords or specific phrases that you're put in there and put them into a search mechanism and be able to identify the company from the teaser. So it might show up, if you put it into Google, it might show up. One of the first few listings might even be their website. And then all of a sudden, those who are kind of searching for that will find it. Maybe the location is next. It is sometimes thought of necessary to include the specific or even a general area where it's located. Sometimes telling somebody it's in New York, wouldn't give them too much information. Could be that you mention that it's in LA, California. Still doesn't give them a whole lot of information. Sometimes you can mention a state. Sometimes just a given area within the United States, such as in the Northwest. There's really, like I said, two schools of thought on this. Some don't want to mention anything. Some will sometimes just mention something like headquartered in the United States. This is an attempt to just keep it close to the vest of where the company is located. Next, a financial summary. This is absolutely just the top line numbers. You could talk about the company being from the U.S. with $5 million in revenues and $1 million in EBITDA. You can mention that the company has grown 30% over the last 3 years. Anything you can do to kind of give a little bit of the insight into it, that will at least open up conversation with a potential buyer. There are some that don't even like to give that much information to at least begin a conversation. Next is investment rationale. This section should actually give a little bit of information to the prospective buyer, whether it's revenue, enterprise customers, concentrated customer base, latest technology, proprietary platforms, patents, whatever it might be that would intrigue them. Then we move on to customer overview. Some teasers also highlight a few of the company's customers, especially if they're major brands in the industry, to build credibility for the company. Next, we have transaction structure. This should talk about the nature of the transaction as expected by the seller. It may be for a complete sale of the business, a simple investment into it, a carve-out, venture financing, etc. And finally, include a few photos, or at least thumbnail photos, of generic industry scenes so that it at least gives it a little flair. Let's now move on to the NDA. There are several different types and names for NDAs. We use a non-compete, non-disclosure, non-circumvent. We use that agreement to protect us and our clients. They can also be called an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, or a confidentiality agreement. You'll see that indicated by a CA. A confidential disclosure agreement, a CDA, proprietary information agreement, a PIA, or a simple secrecy agreement, SA. No matter the name, they're all basically a legal contract between at least two parties that outlines confidentiality, material, knowledge, or information that the parties wish to share with one another for certain purposes. But they wish to restrict access to or by third parties. This contract is where parties agree not to disclose information covered by the agreement. An NDA creates a confidential relationship between the parties, typically to protect any type of confidential and proprietary information or trade secrets. As such, an NDA protects non-public business information. Like all contracts, they cannot be enforced if the contracted activities are felonies. In the world of M&A, NDAs are commonly signed when two companies, individual or other business entities, such as partnerships, societies, etc., are considering transacting a deal, in such as buy, sell, merger, consolidate, etc., and need to understand the processes used in each other's business for the purpose of evaluating the potential deal based upon information that is not in the public domain. NDAs can be mutual, meaning both parties are restricted in their use of the materials provided, or they can restrict the use of material by a single party. Next is an even more critical document in the world of M&A, known as the Confidential Information Memorandum. You'll sometimes see that as CIM, C-I-M. This document tells a company story, explains the value, lays out important facts and figures for the buyers. You will also find that this document referred to as a deck, pitch book, offering memorandum, and confidential business review. So who receives the CIM and when? Well, buyers receive a CIM after signing an NDA that we just talked about, and after passing our vetting process. One of the CIM's main purposes is to help buyers make an informed and swift go or no-go decision. Who prepares the CIM? Well, in our case, the CIM is prepared by us from interviews and documents supplied by our clients. We also rely on our knowledge of the industry and further research. Completing a CIM can take anywhere from a week to 3 or 4 weeks after all the facts have been gathered. But the rest of the sales process will go faster with fewer headaches and missteps. Remember, the goal is not to be for sale, but to sell and maximize value in a sale. While we're putting the CIM together, we will develop and prioritize the list of potential strategic buyers and build out our data room for due diligence. We will also coach our clients on preparing their business. So what information goes into a CIM? A CIM contains insightful discussion of a company's history, products and services, customer base and markets, operations, key technology, processes, capabilities, management and personnel, facilities, important contracts, fixed assets, IP and intangible assets, strategic relationship, growth strategies, and more. It presents and analyzes anywhere from 3 to 5 years of financial statements with normalized adjustments and often includes financial projections. It also usually discusses the competitive landscape and industry outlook. Most of our CIMs are about 10 to 30 pages in length plus exhibits, but we've even done some as recently as 84 pages. Every CIM is a custom piece of work that sells the unique attributes of our clients' businesses. Even though there's a lot of specific data in a CIM, most of the time when we're creating them, we withhold any highly sensitive information, such as identity of customers. A CIM would contain a summary analysis of the customer base, but actual names aren't shared until the due diligence process. And this is after reaching an agreement on price and terms. So, how does this CIM benefit sellers? A professional CIM improves the outcome of a business sale process in several ways, and here's just a few of them. First, it sets expectations. It sets a professional tone for future discussion, builds credibility, and lets the buyers know you're serious about maximizing value. Next, more interest. More buyers will explore a deal when they know the right information is available. Then, perception of value. A consistent story and better information leads to better offers. Conversely, uncertainty produces low offers. Speed. Having reviewed the CIM, buyers quickly move to the next stage in the deal process or move on, which is in everyone's best interests. Next, persuade stakeholders. Buyers have a document in their hand which they can use to educate their partners, lenders, spouse, attorney, CFO, CPA, and other decision makers. Then we have less negotiation. Fewer surprises in due diligence means less renegotiating and fewer blown deals. Another benefit is to secure your proceeds. Important disclosures are often made in the CIM that you will want to be sure are known and documented. Overselling turns buyers off. We therefore aim for transparency and kind of balance the information that's presented. Another key benefit is to save time. The CIM helps you avoid answering key questions piecemeal over and over again and avoid spending time with the wrong buyers. Confidence. You will shape the story, approve the CIM, and understand exactly how your company will be presented. So it's hard to believe, but I know business brokers who think a CIM is too much work and others who believe that the less said to buyers, the better. It is our opinion that selling without a CIM is a formula for disaster. Brokers who rush to market and skimp on this step are likely to disappoint their clients. A well-written CIM is worth the time and effort up front to do the job right. So if you're considering selling your company, I urge you to hire an M&A broker who will invest time and effort to put together a professional presentation, a CIM, for you and your shareholders, one that you deserve. The CIM, or deck as we call it, is an essential part of a successful business sale. All right, here's where I get to take a break and tell you a few things about our firm, Grosch Rose & Moore LLC. We have always believed that our client approach sets us apart from our competition. First and foremost, we listen, and then we take that knowledge, leveraged by our experience and vast contacts, to create the right fit. We then focus on what is important to you, your business, and any shareholders. We also strive to conduct ourselves in a manner that makes certain everyone is treated fairly and equitably. Really, regardless of who you contract with and what they do, you need an experienced M&A advisory firm that has the knowledge to get things done, but understands and cares about your business goals. So if you are looking to buy, sell, consolidate, form a strategic alliance, get a business valuation, or a consultation, call me at 303-941-7865 or email me at wrose@groschrosemore.com. Bottom line, we only want to fee if we've earned it. Whether it's on the buy or the sell side, no deal, no fee. It's that simple. All right, back to the topics of today's broadcast. Next, we will look at a document titled Letter of Intent. Sometimes this is also called a Letter of Understanding. So what is a Letter of Intent? Well, an LOI is a document declaring the preliminary commitment of one party to do business with another. The letter outlines the chief terms of a prospective deal. Commonly used in major business transactions, LOIs are similar in content to term sheets that we'll talk about later. One major difference between the two, though, is that LOIs are presented in letter formats, while term sheets are listicle in nature. So let's understand the letters of understanding or letters of intent. LOIs are useful when two parties are initially brought together to hammer out the broad strokes of a deal before the finer points of a transaction are resolved. LOIs often include provisions stating that a deal may only go through if financing has been secured by one or both parties, or that a deal may be squashed if papers are not signed by a certain date. Since LOIs typically discuss potential points of deals that have not yet been cemented, they are almost universally intended to be non-binding. They can also be changed along the way. One party may present an LOI to which the other party may either counter with a tweaked version of that LOI or draft a new document altogether. Ideally, by the time both parties come together to formalize a deal, there will be no surprises on either side of the table. Many LOIs include non-disclosure agreements that we talked about earlier, which contractually stipulate the components of the deal on both sides that the parties agree to keep confidential, and which details may be shared public. Many LOIs also feature no solicitation provisions, which forbid one party from poaching the other party's employees or customers. Now, the key takeaways here are, first, a letter of intent is a document declaring the preliminary commitment of one party to do business with the other one. Next, the letter outlines the chief terms of a prospective deal and is commonly used in business transactions. Third, LOIs are useful when two parties are initially brought together to hammer out the broad strokes of a deal before resolving the finer points. Let's look at the true purpose of an LOI. Letters of intent may be used by different parties for many different purposes. Parties can use an LOI to outline some of the basic fundamental terms of an agreement that we've talked about before they negotiate and finalize all of those fine points and details. Furthermore, the LOI just may be used to signal that two parties are negotiating a deal, such as a merger or a joint venture. Overall, LOIs claim to achieve the following: clarify the key points of negotiation, protect all the parties involved, and announce the nature of the deal, such as that joint venture or merger between the two companies that I talked about. One thing I mentioned earlier within the realm of an LOI were term sheets. So I want to get into that a little bit so we understand exactly what a term sheet is. A term sheet is a non-binding agreement setting forth the basic terms and conditions under which an investment will be made. It serves as a template to develop more detailed legally binding contracts later. Once the parties involved each reach an agreement on the details laid out in the term sheet, a binding agreement or contract that conforms to the term sheet details is then drawn up. Sound familiar? Well, a term sheet may sound similar to a letter of intent that I just talked about, where the action is predominantly one-sided, as in acquisitions, or a working document to serve as a jumping-off point for more intensive negotiations. The main difference between an LOI and a term sheet is stylistic, in that the former is written as a very formal letter, while the latter comprises of bullet points outlining the terms. Though term sheets are distinct from LOIs and memorandums of understandings, you may hear them referred to interchangeably in casual conversations, as they accomplish similar goals and often contain much of the same information. So the key takeaways on term sheets. First, a term sheet is a non-binding agreement setting forth the basic terms and conditions under which an investment will be made. Next, term sheets are most often associated with startups. Entrepreneurs find that this document is crucial to attracting investors, often venture capitalists, with the available capital to fund their enterprises. And final takeaway, valuation of the company, amount of investment, the percentage stake sought, voting rights, liquidation preference, anti-dilutive provisions, and investor commitment are all some of the key terms that should be spelled out in those term sheets. So now we'll move on to understanding term sheets. Basically, a term sheet should cover the more important aspects of the deal without going into every minor detail and contingency covered by a binding contract. It essentially lays out the groundwork for ensuring that the parties involved in a business transaction agree on the most major aspects of the deal, thereby precluding the possibility of a misunderstanding and lessening the likelihood of unnecessary disputes later. It also ensures that expensive legal charges involved in drawing up a binding agreement or contract are not incurred prematurely. All term sheets will contain certain basic elements, such as information pertaining to identification of the parties involved, valuation, preferred payments, information about all involved assets, initial purchase price, including contingencies that may affect that price, a time frame for a response, and any other information that is considered necessary. Just a moment ago, I mentioned that term sheets are used in startups a lot. With this in mind, there are a few important conditions that a startup term sheet should define. Number one, it is non-binding. Neither the entrepreneur or the venture capitalist is obligated to abide by whatever is outlined in the term sheet in a court of law. Number two, valuation of the company, amount of investment, the percentage stake sought, and anti-dilutive provisions should be spelled out clearly. Number three, clarifying voting rights. Startups seeking funding are usually at the mercy of VCs who want to maximize the return on their investments. This can result in the investor asking for and getting a disproportionate influence in determining the direction that the company will take. Number four, description of the liquidation preference. That is, how will the proceeds of a sale be distributed between the entrepreneur and the investor? And finally, number five, investor commitment. How long will the investor wait before bailing on their investment? Those are all very important elements. And just to kind of enforce this a little bit, entrepreneurs find that this document is crucial to attracting investors, and most of those within the VC category, venture capitalists, because they seem to utilize term sheets more. So in approaching them, you need to make sure that you not only have one, but it's very clear and concise. Now finally here, a term sheet used as a part of a merger or attempted acquisition would obviously contain typical information regarding the initial purchase price offer and preferred payment method, as well as what assets are included in the deal. But it may also contain information regarding what, if anything, is excluded from the deal, or any items that may be considered requirements by either one or even both parties. Well, that's pretty much it on the topic of tools of the trade today. We did have quite a few questions come in today. I know 30 minutes sometimes isn't long enough to get into all of this, so I will go ahead and answer those via email after the show. I appreciate you guys touching base with me. We're actually running out of time today, so I just want to take a moment to once again thank our listeners for checking out what we've had to say. And thanks again for those of you who participated in today's program by sending in a couple questions. Please join us next week, where we will continue to explore events and processes within our industry and then provide you with the valuable interpretation of what that means to you and your business or any shareholders. Again, keep sending in your questions to be addressed on the air, and if I don't get to them live during the broadcast, I will personally email you with the answers to all of your questions. Thanks again for listening to M&A Today and for the support you've shown us so far in 2020. Every show we've had more listeners than we had the previous show so far this year. So thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great rest of your week. We'll be right here again next Friday at noon Eastern and look forward to bringing you more information, and to answer your questions on the world of M&A. Thanks again.